Minnesota Reads this morning on KUMD. It's produced here at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. The chuckles provided all by us on our own. Urban legends from space. We need an echo effect. From space, 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 space. And Bob King, the author, joins us in our studio this morning. Kevin Stanky. And Bob, these are all your photographs, I bet. Every single one of these, or almost.
No, just a few of them are. Some are shared photographs actually from Wikipedia, and some are graphics that were done by the Duluth News Tribune graphics artist, Gary Meter.
Oh, wow.
So it's really a mix. He helped me out in this on the graphics. I did some of the photos, though, yes.
There's one of yours, and I was like, what am I looking at? And then I realized that you used it as an illustration for looking at things and perhaps photographing space things. Even very dark things like this charcoal briquette can appear bright when seen against an even darker background. Likewise, comets and dark-crusted asteroids can seem... Because the briquette looks like light gray in one picture against a black background, and then it looks black against a light background.
That was one of my charcoal briquettes that I use for grilling. And I bring it up, and the point of that, of course, is to illustrate that the moon, which appears to be very bright in the sky, is in reality a very dark object. It's approximately as bright as the UMD parking lot out here, a fresh, brand-new asphalt. That's similar to the moon's actual color. And if you've seen pictures of astronauts, they've got moon dust on their suits. So there's one great photo of some black dust on one of the astronauts' head because he scratched his forehead.
Oh, sure.
And it looks just like charcoal dust. But it depends upon the background. The moon looks bright because we see it against a black sky.
Right.
And if you see it in the daytime against the clouds in the sunshine, it looks paler, much paler.
Right.
In reality,
looks
it's quite dark.
White.
It's like charcoal dark.
Huh.
Uh-huh. So that's the purpose of that illustration.
It's amazing. So speaking of the moon, I'm not going to ask you what the biggest myth is about space, because we are offering, as we mentioned, Bob's book as a special thank you gift at the $120 membership level this morning. And so we're not going to try to spoil the whole thing for
you.
We don't want to spoil all the secrets. But do people go loony during full moons? Do birth and crime rates spike during full moons?
They do not, actually.
Now, people who work in ERs
are
the ones that are quoted most often as saying, well, it's a full moon, blah, blah, blah. So tell
people
us.
People used to say that where I work, too. If there was when I worked at the News Tribune, if there was a crime spree, you know, maybe two in a row, two night, whatever.
Right.
People would say, must be full moon. But the thing is, when people do say that, they never check to actually see what the phase of the moon is.
But, of course, you knew.
You know,
and
if
so
you are observing.
The reporters would say this, and then this little head would pop up out of a cubicle. It is not a full moon.
This pain in the butt guy would walk out from the photo department. So, yes, and that's true at hospitals. And I'm not just saying that, but there have been huge studies done about birth spiking and crime spiking during full moons when people are supposedly affected by the moon and become loony. And it is... No more than chance.
Huh.
Honestly, if you think about it, maybe you've actually said it must be a full moon, but I doubt you ever checked the phase because it might have been a waxing crescent.
Actually,
but it just gets passed on. Most people will just pass on, hey, it must be full moon, and then you pass it on, and it kind of becomes a, I guess you could call it an urban legend.
Well, you say it's confirmation bias.
Yeah, well,
the idea that we sort of expect a certain outcome, and so then whenever it would happen, we point to it and say, you know, I listened to Bob King this morning. He said it was a full moon. I came home. The dog was in the garbage.
There you
are. Full moon. One thing, though, that I did learn many, many full moons ago, actually when I was working in Fargo one particular summer, is that a heat wave will drive rates of domestic violence up.
Yes, I think there is a connection there.
Because people just, they get too miserably uncomfortable and they get really short-tempered.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it's not full moon, it's just too hot.
Yes.
Something that we here are not going to have to worry about for forever.
But the confirmation bias thing is, excuse me, it's a very important part because we tend to see the evidence that agrees with our point of view, we recognize and say, yes, see, it happened.
Right.
But the part that doesn't agree, because we either don't know it or just simply ignore it out of ignorance sometimes, that's forgotten. And so it looks like a certain thing causes another when there's actually no causation.
Because you can't prove a negative. It's like it happened once, but how many times didn't it happen?
Right.
During the full moon.
Maybe it happened 6 times out of 700 full moons, but that would be enough for you, based on your bias, to say, hey, this full moon is connected to these births or crime or whatever it happens to be.
Okay, now here's something else. You know, this is a radio station. This sort of thing is really important to us. We spend a lot of time editing and looking at sound waves like this, as a matter of fact. So,
yes,
in space, can anybody hear you scream?
Nobody can hear you scream in space.
So that is true.
That is absolutely true.
In space, no one can hear you scream. In a radio station, they can.
Yes, of course, but...
So you're safe, Bob. You'll be okay. Somebody will hear you.
Can I scream now?
You're not that safe. You're not that safe.
That's a good one.
But you can hear sounds in outer space.
Well, you need a medium for sound, right? You've got to have air, because it is the moving air that reaches your inner ear that creates the sound. It's doing the pushing, the sound waves. In space, where it's a vacuum, or virtually a vacuum, there's very few molecules, very few atoms. There's no medium there to transmit the sound. So if there was an enormous explosion, like right now, great example, think of the sun. The sun, when we go out on a sunny day, the sun is absolutely quiet. You can't hear the sun, right?
Not usually.
Maybe
sometimes
you can.
During a full moon. I'm pretty sure the sun talks to me then. But okay, yeah.
If there was a medium, if there was air between us and the sun, let's say, then you would hear the sun, and it would be a continuous, extremely loud, low roar and rumble.
Oh, I just read another article also that talked about how constant noise just flips people out. I just read it. I think it was in The Atlantic, that constant noise, if people are exposed to, you know, some kind of constant noise from, you know, either their work environment or whatever, that if they can't get restful sleep without this constant noise, they completely lose their marbles.
Are you talking about using like that kind of have a background noise?
Background noise, they use that as an example. There was a guy that lived someplace, and there was a factory or it was a something, but, you know, highway noise, or a guy that had neighbors that were partying loudly, and he couldn't sleep at night, and they were partying all night, and he actually went out and did a bad thing, committed a crime against the neighbors, because he just had not had any sleep, and he couldn't sleep for the racket. And he took their lives, and then he took his own. He said, I just need quiet.
Hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so maybe it's just as well that we can't hear the sun.
It is good. It is good. It's good that there's no air between the sun and us, because we'd probably get roasted.
Yeah. Okay, but here is a question. Is air the only medium that sound moves through?
No, as a matter of fact, and that's a great question, too. Actually, sound moves more slowly through air than it does through liquid. Just think of being in a pool and hearing the little scrapey sounds, or if somebody comes by, you can hear them too, or you can knock on the side of the pool.
Oh, yeah, it's like it's really loud.
And it's loud. The sound travels faster. I don't know. It's in the book, but it travels faster through water, and it travels fastest through metal, very fast. I remember as a kid, I would put my ear, I know this is dangerous, and please don't do this, Lisa, but
okay.
I would put my ear on a railroad track.
You dimwit.
But I was just testing the qualities and the speed of sound. So I put my
That would have been a great comfort to your parents, Bob.
Well, I didn't see the train. My friends
you would have heard it.
We didn't,
but
go.
Not very fast, because sound doesn't travel through metal very well, Bob.
No. It travels extremely well through metal.
Oh, does it? Oh.
It travels better through metal than through water or air. And if you put your ear, and don't do this, but if you put your ear on a rail, you will hear the train coming long, long
before you see it. It actually travels through iron at 11,450 miles an hour.
Yes.
15 times airspeed.
Yes.
Very rapid. So in that case,
it is a dense medium, and it transmits sound beautifully. And space is exactly the opposite of a metal, right?
Right.
There's almost nothing there, so there's really nothing to transmit the sound.
This is fascinating. I love this book. Would you guys mind just talking so that I can just have a couple minutes to read quietly?
Well, if you would like a copy of this book, you can call us at 218-726-7181. Get a copy of Urban Legends from Space by Bob King, who's joining us today. And if you pledge at $120 or more, you can get that copy of Urban Legends from Space by Bob King. The number again is 218-726-7181.
Okay, got to ask you one last question. So according to this, Nemesis is pretend, but the Oort cloud is real.
Yes, the Oort cloud is real.
Okay.
Well, we actually have evidence for that, and that's largely what the book is about. It really is a look at science versus pseudoscience. So it's
That's kind of an interesting topic for this point in our history, isn't it?
It really is, because in science, you've got sort of the, when you come up with your theory, it's subject to rigorous review and attacks by other scientists. If you come out with an idea, it's going to be examined closely. People are going to try to prove it or disprove it. And so it really withstands the test of time and scrutiny, whereas pseudoscience, criticism like that is seen as part of a conspiracy. And
right,
there's lots
right.
of differences between the
two. It's just
two.
Part of a cover-up.
I like to bring up the example of the flat Earth, which a very tiny segment of our society thinks that the planet is flat. And some people might think, well,
these are all people who live in the Red River Valley, by the way.
Okay. Well, it is flatter out there than it is here in Duluth.
You can't live in Duluth
and know when it's flat.
No, there are very few flat earthers here in Duluth, but in the Red River Valley, they kind of got a point there.
But in the flat Earth, it seems like it's just good fun almost. Well, what harm can come from believing that the Earth is flat, even though we have many, many proofs, the most obvious one being we've left the planet, looked back, and discovered, by gosh, it is a sphere.
Yeah, but see, that's a conspiracy, too, and those photos are faked.
Of course, the millions of them. And well, anyway.
Yes.
So we had the flat Earth. But the problem with that sort of belief is that if you're willing to believe that, which is a pseudoscientific belief, you might go further down that road and perhaps go as far as believing that vaccines are bad for you.
Right.
And then ignore getting vaccinated, which could lead to lethal consequences in some cases.
Yes.
So it's sort of the book is a way of making you or helping you to become a little more skeptical about what you read and see, and also to become more observant of nature and trust your senses. Because they will steer you straight when you start to see some of this stuff. You'll be like, wait a minute, that can't be a UFO that you saw. I think what you saw, based on your description, is a sun dog or
right.
a weather balloon. As a matter of fact, I saw for the first time in my life, I saw one of the best UFOs yesterday when I walked out.
Really?
Yes. It was only a UFO for one moment. And what I saw when I walked out was a white dot in the sky, in the blue sky. And I looked and I went, what is that? And I got my telephoto lens out, pointed.
Bob's always got his camera with him, which is one of the many reasons he's my hero.
I keep it on my holster right here and I just whip it right out.
Yep.
And I looked at it and sure enough, it was a weather balloon with a radio sonde, which is a you could see the package of instruments dangling below the balloon.
Oh, wow.
And they were transmitting data on winds in the upper atmosphere. I don't know where the balloon came from. I've always read about it, but it was the first time in my life I saw it. I took it as a sign. No, not really. But it was delightful to see it. And it was one of those things where if you saw it quickly and got nervous about it, you may not have taken a moment to identify it. But if you took a moment to look at it more closely, you'd go, ah, I see what that is.
So you put on your tinfoil hat so that it couldn't scan your brain.
Yes. I didn't mention that part, Lisa. Sorry you caught me.
this really is fascinating. And the idea, too, that testing that we talk about with science, the idea that other professionals are challenging it with prove it. What about this? They're not just going, oh, yeah? Well, I don't think so.
Yeah, and real science doesn't seek evidence that just supports what that point of view is. Now, granted, we're all human and there's egos involved.
Yes.
But in real science, it invites criticism. Somebody will make a claim based on their experiment, and they have their reputation at stake when they do that, because they know that somebody might just lunge right into them to try to disprove it. So they have to be super careful. So, and then when it is proven by another party, that just makes their theory stronger. And then again and again, look at Einstein. So that guy has been beat up so many times by so many scientific teams, and yet every time he's come up with the glove in the air.
Exactly.
He's the winner.
It's like, criticism, you can't touch this
yet. Because of all of that, the theory is strong.
Right.
And we take it as fact. And that's what theories are. Matter of fact, I don't come up with theories. I try to avoid that. My theory, a lot of us say the word.
Right.
My theory is, but a theory is an enormous construct of facts that have been painstakingly worked over and proven. So it's not a simple little, I got a theory type thing. But in parlance, that's what it's become.
In conversation,
just
I would much rather someone say, I have a theory, than say, this is the way it is. Because when I encounter people in conversation that say, this is the way it is, frequently that immediately kind of puts me on alert. in your world, perhaps. But.
Right. This is the way. And the thing is, that's what's beautiful and incredibly frustrating about science, because in science, things are not absolute. There is the way it is now, until some additional data or better understanding improves that idea. So ideas are always changing, and that's the beauty and the frustration of science, is that it's morphing continuously towards, I guess you could say, the best explanation for whatever phenomenon it is.
Right.
And in the case of pseudoscience, that criticism is just brushed off, or it's, you know, looked at as an attack of some sort. In science, it's
a personal attack.
Like a personal
not
attack.
Not an attack on the theory, an attack on a person or a philosophy of being held by the person. Right. And somehow, the idea of changing your mind or of getting additional information has been demonized. We're supposed to be super polarized. You know, either you're set in your ways and you never change, or you're a flip-flopper. And whatever happened to growing up? I think it was Maya Angelou who said, "When we know better, we do better." Mm-hmm. And I am not usually one for little maxims and stuff, but that one I love, because we're always,
it's true,
as learning as human beings, and everything we learn gives us the opportunity to make a better choice the next time.
And to me, that is, you know, flip-flopping. It's got the negative connotations, but you have to be willing to change based upon new information, as hard as that can be, because sometimes for us it goes to our egos. It becomes, we identify personally with something.
Right.
But change is good that way, and it's important, although it's very important to be skeptical about what you read and see, but it's equally important to keep an open mind about it too, and realize that we're all striving to reach some great understanding of whatever the phenomena or truth we're after.
Right.
So science is just, to me, so far, one of the best ways that human beings have come up with to do that. And it's because it's shared across the planet. It's supposed to be unbiased, although egos are involved, etc.
Right, right.
But it is shared. It's verifiable. It's subject to review by your peers,
right,
by other scientists. And so when you get the product in the end, my gosh, the information is solid enough that you can build an airplane based on those principles, let's say, and you can get on that plane, and you're happy and you feel safe. And that's because so much science and engineering has gone into that. So it really has very profound practical benefits, too.
You know, Kev, when he was talking about science, he was talking about it's verifiable. He was describing KUMD. He was describing public radio. It's verifiable. You can listen to it. It's global. You can listen to KUMD everywhere. It has been reviewed by its peers. Some people like it. More people like it. Some people are not fans, but more people like it. It has been reviewed and challenged by its peers and come up 65 years now. I'm just saying.
And it proves that there's air. Because you can hear us.
Yes. There's air. There's air involved. Sound
Very
is involved.
Good.
I'm thinking that, and the new information that you might have gotten this morning either would have been oh, public radio works because we listen all the time for free. And then a couple of times a year, they come to us and say, become a member. And then we get to decide how much money we want to spend on it. And then we send that money amount in. That might be new information to you. The new information might be, I know how pledge drives work, but Bob King's new book is my thank you gift when I call now. That might be the new information.
Yes, and the number call is 218-726-7181. We'd love to give you a copy of Urban Legends from Space. We've been joined by Bob King here today, and this book is written by him, and I think you will enjoy it immensely.
It is super fun, and you will have so many jolly conversations with friends and family about this book. Call now to take advantage of that opportunity, and Bob, thanks a gazillion for coming in. Well, I'll make you stick around and sign a couple of books, okay?
Sounds great. Thanks for having me. It's been fun.
Bob King, our guest this morning here on Minnesota Reads.